comical that I laughed hysterically. I couldn't help being aware, however, that my laughter was unusual. My body shook with nervous spasms originating from the middle part of my stomach. Don Genaro put his hand on my stomach, and the convulsion-like ripples ceased.
"This little Carlos is always so exaggerated," he exclaimed, as if he were a fastidious man.
Then he added, imitating Don Juan's voice and mannerisms,
"Don't you know that a warrior never laughs that way?"
His caricature of Don Juan was so perfect that I laughed even harder. Then both of them left together and were gone for over 2 hours, until about midday. When they returned, they sat in the area in front of Don Juan's house. They didn't say a word. They seemed to be sleepy, tired, almost absent-minded. They stayed motionless for a long time, yet they seemed to be so comfortable and relaxed. Don Juan's mouth was slightly opened, as if he were really asleep, but his hands were clasped over his lap, and his thumbs moved rhythmically. I fretted and changed sitting positions for a while. Then I began to feel a soothing placidity. I must have fallen asleep. Don Juan's chuckle woke me up. I opened my eyes. Both of them were staring at me.
"If you don't talk, you fall asleep," Don Juan said, laughing.
"I'm afraid I do," I said. Don Genaro lay on his back and began to kick his legs in the air. I thought for a moment that he was going to start his disturbing clowning again, but he went back right away to his cross-legged sitting position.
"There is something you ought to be aware of by now," Don Juan said. "I call it the cubic centimeter of chance. All of us, whether or not we're warriors, have a cubic centimeter of chance that pops out in front of our eyes from time to time. The difference between an average man and a warrior is that the warrior is aware of this, and one of his tasks is to be alert, deliberately waiting, so that when his cubic centimeter pops out, he has the necessary speed, the prowess, to pick it up. Chance, good luck, personal power, or whatever you may call it, is a peculiar state of affairs. It's like a very small stick that comes out in front of us and invites us to pluck it. Usually we're too busy, or too preoccupied, or just too stupid and lazy to realize that this is our cubic centimeter of luck. A warrior, on the other hand, is always alert and tight and has the spring, the gumption necessary to grab it." "Is your life very tight?" Don Genaro asked me abruptly.
"I think it is," I said with conviction.
"Do you think that you can pluck your cubic centimeter of luck?" Don Juan asked me, with a tone of incredulity.
"I believe I do that all the time," I said.
"I think you're only alert about things you know," Don Juan said.
"Maybe I'm kidding myself, but I do believe that nowadays I'm more aware than at any other time in my life," I said, and really meant it. Don Genaro nodded his head in approval.
"Yes," he said softly, as if talking to himself. "Little Carlos is really tight and absolutely alert."
I felt that they were humoring me. I thought that perhaps my assertion about my alleged condition of tightness may have annoyed them.
"I didn't mean to brag," I said.
Don Genaro arched his eyebrows and enlarged his nostrils. He glanced at my notebook and pretended to be writing.
"I think Carlos is tighter than ever," Don Juan said to Don Genaro.
"Maybe he's too tight," Don Genaro snapped.
"He may very well be," Don Juan conceded.
I didn't know what to interject at that point, so I remained quiet.
"Do you remember the time when I jammed your car?" Don Juan asked casually.
His question was abrupt and unrelated to what we'd been talking about. He was referring to the time when I couldn't start the engine of my car until he said I could. I remarked that no one could forget such an event.
That was nothing, Don Juan asserted in a factual tone.
Nothing at all. True, Genaro?
True, Don Genaro said indifferently.
What do you mean? I said in a tone of protest. What you did that day was something truly beyond my comprehension.
That's not saying much, Don Genaro retorted.
They both laughed loudly, and then Don Juan patted me on the back.
Genaro can do something much better than jamming your car, he went on.
True, Genaro?
True,
Don Genaro replied, puckering up his lips like a child.
What can he do? I asked, trying to sound unruffled.
Genaro can take your whole car away, Don Juan exclaimed in a booming voice, and then he added in the same tone, True, Genaro?
True, Don Genaro retorted, in the loudest human tone I'd ever heard. I jumped involuntarily. My body was convulsed by 3 or 4 nervous spasms.
What do you mean, he can take my whole car away? I asked.
What did I mean, Genaro?
Don Juan asked.
You meant that I can get into his car, turn the motor on, and drive away,
Don Genaro replied with unconvincing seriousness.
Take the car away, Genaro,
Don Juan urged him in a joking tone.
It's done,
Don Genaro said, frowning and looking at me askew. I noticed that as he frowned, his eyebrows rippled, making the look in his eyes mischievous and penetrating.
All right, Don Juan said calmly. Let's go down there and examine the car.
Yes, Don Genaro echoed.
Let's go down there and examine the car.
They stood up very slowly. For an instant, I didn't know what to do, but Don Juan signaled me to stand up. We began walking up the small hill in front of Don Juan's house. Both of them flanked me, Don Juan to my right and Don Genaro to my left. They were perhaps 6 or 7 feet ahead of me, always within my full field of vision.
Let's examine the car, Don Genaro said again.
Don Juan moved his hands as if he were spinning an invisible thread. Don Genaro did likewise, and repeated, Let's examine the car. They walked with a sort of bounce. Their steps were longer than usual, and their hands moved as though they were whipping or batting some invisible objects in front of them. I'd never seen Don Juan clowning like that, and felt almost embarrassed to look at him. We reached the top, and I looked down to the area at the foot of the hill some 50 yards away where I'd parked my car. My stomach contracted with a jolt. The car wasn't there. I ran down the hill. My car wasn't anywhere in sight. I experienced a moment of great confusion. I was disoriented. My car had been parked there since I arrived early in the morning. Perhaps 30 minutes before, I'd come down to get a new pad of writing paper. At that time, I'd thought of leaving the windows open because of the excessive heat, but the number of mosquitoes and other flying insects that abounded in the area had made me change my mind, and I'd left the car locked, as usual. I looked all around again. I refused to believe that my car was gone. I walked to the edge of the cleared area. Don Juan and Don Genaro joined me and stood by me, doing exactly what I was doing— peering into the distance to see if the car was somewhere in sight. I had a moment of euphoria that gave way to a disconcerting sense of annoyance. They seemed to have noticed it and began to walk around me, moving their hands as if they were rolling dough in them.
"What do you think happened to the car, Genaro?"
Don Juan asked in a meek tone.
"I drove it away,"
Don Genaro said, and made the most astounding motion of shifting gears and steering. He bent his legs, as though he were sitting, and remained in that position for a few moments, obviously sustained only by the muscles in his legs. Then he shifted his weight to his right leg and stretched his left foot to mimic the action on the clutch. He made the sound of a motor with his lips, And finally, to top everything, he pretended to have hit a bump in the road and bobbed up and down, giving me the complete sensation of an inept driver that bounces without letting go of the steering wheel. Don Genaro's pantomime was stupendous. Don Juan laughed until he was out of breath. I wanted to join them in their mirth, but I was unable to relax. I felt threatened and ill at ease. An anxiety that had no precedence in my life possessed me. I felt I was burning up inside, and began kicking small rocks on the ground, and ended up hurling them with an unconscious and unpredictable fury. It was as if the wrath was actually outside of myself and had suddenly enveloped me. Then the feeling of annoyance left me, as mysteriously as it had hit me. I took a deep breath and felt better. I didn't dare to look at Don Juan. My display of anger embarrassed me, but at the same time, I wanted to laugh. Don Juan came to my side and patted me on the back. Don Genaro put his arm on my shoulder.
"It's all right," Don Genaro said. "Indulge yourself. Punch yourself in the nose and bleed. Then you can get a rock and knock your teeth out. It'll feel good. And if that doesn't help, you can mash your balls with the same rock on that big boulder over there."
Don Juan giggled. I told them that I was ashamed of myself for having behaved so poorly. I didn't know what had gotten into me. Don Juan said that he was sure I knew exactly what was going on, that I was pretending not to know, and that it was the act of pretending that made me angry. Don Genaro was unusually comforting. He patted my back repeatedly.
"It happens to all of us," Don Juan said.
"What do you mean by that, Don Juan?" Don Genaro asked, imitating my voice, mocking my habit of asking Don Juan questions.
Don Juan said some absurd things, like,
"When the world is upside down, we are right side up. But when the world is right side up, we are upside down. Now, when the world and we are right side up, we think we're upside down."
He went on and on, talking gibberish, while Don Genaro mimicked my taking notes. He wrote on an invisible pad, enlarging his nostrils as he moved his hand, keeping his eyes wide open and fixed on Don Juan. Don Genaro had caught on to my efforts to write without looking at my pad in order to avoid altering the natural flow of conversation. His portrayal was genuinely hilarious. I suddenly felt very at ease, happy. Their laughter was soothing. For a moment, I let go and had a belly laugh. But then my mind entered into a new state of apprehension, confusion, and annoyance. I thought that whatever was taking place there was impossible. In fact, it was inconceivable according to the logical order by which I am accustomed to judge the world at hand. Yet, as the perceiver, I perceived that my car wasn't there. The thought occurred to me, as it always had happened when Don Juan had confronted me with inexplicable phenomena, that I was being tricked by ordinary means. My mind had always, under stress, involuntarily and consistently repeated the same construct. I began to consider how many confederates Don Juan and Don Genaro would have needed in order to lift my car and remove it from where I'd parked it. I was absolutely sure that I had compulsively locked the doors. The handbrake was on, it was in gear, and the steering wheel was locked. In order to move it, they would have had to lift it up bodily. That task would have required a labor force that I was convinced neither of them could have brought together. Another possibility was that someone in agreement with them had broken into my car, wired it, and driven it away. To do that would have required a specialized knowledge that was beyond their means. The only other possible explanation was that perhaps